You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Welcome, Dream Team, to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading providers of spread betting, CFD and FX trading, as I'm sure you know by now. Tins is alongside. How are we feeling out of 10?
Actually, my shoulder is a little bit sore.
Right. We're not giving away too many trade secrets, but we can say we've had a very good weekend in Ireland.
Thank you to Jane and Johnny, if they're listening.
Thank you to Jane and Johnny.
Hosts of the most. But yeah, it was good. It was good crap, wasn't it? The Bushnell's got us a little bit at the end.
I woke up this morning, my wife said, Jesus Christ, I've never seen you look so poor in all your life. She said, you could be 70, but we've reinflated ourselves and we're going again on Monday. It's a very warm welcome to Leicester City's goalkeeper. The fourth wheel very on our
good.
Car.
Very good.
You're out of isolation. How are you?
I am, yeah, fresh. I didn't get to go away because of the protocol with it all, but after the bye week, I'm recharged, 17 days off.
Wow.
Mid-season, can't ask for much more.
You're always complaining about the fact you're playing too much rugby. You've got to take the break when it comes.
I know, yeah. I said I was cold today as well and I got shorts on, so a bit of a hypocrite lately.
I do feel sorry for the first man who's having to make the tackle on the baby.
No, you feel so much more after like a week off or 2 weeks off. You literally, every single knock is 10 times worse. So I'm dreading it really, yeah.
Right. We should say you're Leicester City's goalkeeper because you're coming at the liveliest top I've seen in a long time.
This is decent.
Yeah.
I've got four as well, but like all in different colours. So I think that's a thing we're going to get going.
And we've asked you to bring in Show and Tell this week. And what have you brought in for us on the show this week?
You didn't ask us to bring Show and Tell?
Well, you brought it. You brought in a very impressive Show and Tell.
Show them. We've got Freddie Stewart.
Hello.
Very nice to be here. Alongside. One of the golden childs at the moment. God, stop it. How are you?
If anything's letting him down, it's just the tash, isn't it? Give it a couple of years, it'll really kick in.
Can we just confirm this is Movember?
This is Movember. It is my attempt at Movember. It was a week early. I had to have Head Start and I'm still not sure if you'll be able to see it from there, but it's patchy, it's awful, and it's going tomorrow. So.
It's the thickest, patchiest tash I've ever seen. Yeah. It's like real thick, but real patchy at the same time. So it's like thick, patchy, thick.
Just a mess with it, really.
It's like Morse code.
As if someone's got a real strong code.
Yeah, right, Ellis.
You know? Real big gaps.
Yeah. You can get those roller things. It's like sort of like, it's like a scourer for your lawn, which brings up the grass. You can get those roller things that you put over the top.
Need to invest.
We'll buy one.
It's not something that will be coming back till next November. So,
it's very good to have you alongside. Just give us, I mean, how good is life right now? What a month. In fact, what a 6 months you've had, but what a month in particular.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. Bit crazy, really. You know, I got an opportunity this week with a week off to sort of just sit back and take in what's happened. Because when you're in it, it's sort of flashes by and you're so involved in it and in it that you don't really have a chance to look back at it and sort of appreciate what's going on. So no, it's been a really nice opportunity just to look back at that 4 weeks and it's been awesome.
We'll talk about the rugby as we go, but what have you done with your week off?
I got to go home and see family Monday and Tuesday, which was very nice because I've not been able to get home for a while back in Norfolk. So that was a really nice couple of days there.
Yeah,
went back to Loughborough, which is where I'm at the moment, and then managed to get up to see some friends in Newcastle over the weekend, which was brilliant. Had a good fun there. You can probably hear my voice; it's still a little bit dusty, but
well deserved, I'm sure.
Never a bad night out.
Never a bad night out. Is the boat still going in Newcastle?
Now you're showing your age.
I haven't been there for about 20 years, but it always used to be, that used to be the focal point. What's the focal point in Newcastle now?
I'd have to say Market Shaker. That's where we were on Saturday night, and that was good fun. So
did you head to Filthy's?
Not heard of Filthy's either.
One of our dining guests on the weekend, the Irishman Peter Dolan, Filthy's. Great place, actually. That's where I was after the Champions Cup final that was up there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well worth a visit, everyone in Newcastle.
Next time I'm there,
I'm sure they'll know about it.
I'll be sure to visit.
Is life different?
I wouldn't say so. No, not really. It's sort of, you know, you're in it, you're away in that sort of bubble and that environment, and then now we're home again and it's back to Leicester and life is on as normal. So it's nice to almost be back and just be back to sort of the day in, day out back at Leicester and back to work.
Do you get a bit of a clip in training? Have you gone, Ellis, have you gone hunting him just to make sure that...
We haven't trained yet.
So he's still walking on water.
We'll see, yeah.
Unbelievable. I'm always fascinated as to, and I'd love to kind of explore this with you, but as someone who is
is going quickly in his career. It's happening very quickly for you. You know, what are the sort of, what are the bits that you're holding on to quite tight just to make sure it's not all happening too fast, if you know what I mean?
I think it's just appreciating that it's been an awesome campaign, but it's three games and there's a lot of stuff going on. There people saying things, but for me, it's just that it's three games. Yeah. Did all right, but you know, it doesn't make you a superstar doing stuff in three games. You know, it's potentially a 10-12 year career, so it's looking at that and appreciating that it's gone really well, and I'm really pleased with how it all went. But now it's about, you know, that consistency. Can it be a thing that continues? And that's sort of a little bit of motivation to get back to it.
What's Botha's been like? Because I know he was always very good at making sure people's feet stayed firmly on the ground. Even when he was 18, he was screaming at internationals and he'd never played an international. But how has he been?
Yeah, he's been brilliant. As Genji said, we haven't been in actually since. It was only today the first time, but he's probably the best man to be going back to. You know, Steve's awesome at that sort of thing.
Little phone call?
I've been speaking to him throughout the campaign. So yeah, a little phone call here and there, and I'm sure he'll be very on me for that.
This is the most 2021 question, but it kind of gives a sense of how things are going. How much did the Instagram following go up?
Yeah, it went mental.
Did it really?
It really did. After the Australia game, it sort of went a bit mental. Then South Africa again, it went even more.
So what have you gone from? 3, 4, 5?
I think it was 7 or 8 to now about 26 or 27. So it's just blown up, which is it's weird because, you know, we're just playing rugby and then that sort of thing is just going, it has been a bit mental.
How well did he do?
No, he was brilliant. Obviously, I was only there for a week and a bit and spent a summer with him where, I don't know, you're sort of finding your feet, I guess, in the summer because you haven't played much rugby before that, really. It's only your first season in, like, consistently in the first team with us for a year. So, but I've been at the club with Fred now, what, 3 years?
3 years
two
now,
and a bit years. And you played for the 20s and stuff. And, like, being honest, when you first came in, you were pretty garbage, weren't you? First year, mate, Jordy Murphy was like, this kid's mustard. And I was like, yeah, mustard. Like, he's obviously a big lad, like, gets the high ball. He's, like, jumping the four backs behind him and that. So to watch his development over the last years, it's been class. And now to see, like, the fruits come to labour and stuff, it's unreal.
How do you sort of look at the last, I mean, because we'll deal with the autumn itself, but how do you look at the last 2-3 years and what has been integral to getting to where you are now? If you came in as a kid who was in the wrong postcode when the ball went up, what is integral now to being, you know, an absolute bomb disposal unit?
I think for me, it's just always been about the next thing. So trying not to sort of look too far ahead. Like Genji says, in that first year when I was just this gangly, tall, skinny guy who didn't really found his place. It was just trying to find things to work at, find skills that I can really work hard at. And from there on, just hard work, I suppose. I think I was never even thinking about England or even Leicester first team when I first came in, really. That wasn't where I thought I would be able to get to immediately. And it just sort of all happened very quickly. I worked hard, got an opportunity. I think you might have been playing. It was against Sail Away. I was a travelling reserve. I was at school still. I got the call because there was a couple of injuries at fullback and they got me on the bus to Sail. I remember all the boys were in their hotel rooms. I didn't have one because I was a travelling reserve, so I was there doing my schoolwork in the canteen.
Just on that, I mean, how brutal is that to be doing homework in front of...
I know.
Not just Leicester, but England legends as well. Were they sympathetic and encouraging with your algebra?
They were all chilling in the hotel.
Guaranteed
I was there
they didn't help, right?
No, definitely not. But I was never in the sort of mental frame of mind that I would play there. I'd play that night. And we got to the stadium, warmed up, and George, one of the fullbacks, I saw him sort of walk off with a little hobble, and I thought, oh my... then Jordy came over to me and said, we're going to need you on the bench. So I sort of had 15 minutes to sort of get ready for that and be like, oh my word, I could be coming on the Premiership here as a young kid. And then I got on, I think it was like the 76th minute. First thing, they kicked behind me, caught it and got absolutely bundled straight into the dead ball. 5 metre scrum sale and they scored. So it was a bit of a baptism of fire, but that was a pretty weird experience. And then it was just from there, like Prem Cup chances then when there were a couple of injuries and then Steve came in and there it was just about working hard in that pre-season and just trying to get picked with him.
Were you a big rugby playing kid or did you find it late? What was your route into the game?
So my older brother played a lot of rugby and I sort of came into it through him. So we used to go down on a Sunday to my local rugby club, Swaffham. And that's where he played. And I actually hated it to start with. I remember I used to lock myself in the car, didn't want to play, wasn't interested. And that was when I was about 4 or 5, and then slowly got introduced and slowly started to fall in love with it. And then I've played, yeah, since I was about 5, 6, every Sunday, you know, proper grassroots at my local rugby club, and then played a bit at school and then got into Leicester through there.
Interesting. And have you always been a fullback? Because actually you started at 8. Mm. You must have started at 10 or 12.
No, I started at 8. Moved
you both started at 8?
Prop for like under 12s. Then okay. 8 at 13, 14, centre, wing at 16.
You were wing at 16?
Played Somerset at wing, yeah, number 11.
Holy Moses, I did not know that.
Scored like 5 tries in the Mendip final.
Did you really?
yeah, I got a video of it.
Have you got a step on you, or are you just a little sort of the Maori side step?
Forward step.
Yeah, exactly.
had an opposition winger who was playing touch, and you didn't understand that you didn't get the game.
And then back to 8, and then back to prop, obviously, yeah. Alan Martinovic scouted me for Hartbury. Playing centre against Colston's for Caenham.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's a full circle of that.
Yeah.
Versatile.
I just played everywhere where you didn't have to distribute. Yeah.
So if it's ever needed, I'm going to come back to the question already, but if it's ever needed, would you offer to step out?
Yeah, I'd love to, yeah. Really? I'd be more comfortable on the wing, I think, than in the centre. It's a bit harder to read the D in the centre, isn't it? I think it's a guessing game on the edge.
By the looks of things,
Fred, yeah.
We got the campaign for England captaincy through the through passport control.
You're pushing the wing through now.
We'll push one for you to get out on the wing.
Eddie said, props could, well, a winger can play back row. Why can't a prop play a wing?
Yeah.
Everyone needs to sort of start mixing positions up, especially with the cap coming down and squads being a bit tighter now. You've got to play multiple positions.
Yeah.
Put my name in the app.
You're gonna offer 15 and second row.
Second row, yeah. I get the odd joke about getting me up in the line out. It never gets old.
We got Rory McConachy up in the line out at the World Cup. And, really? Was it World Cup? Yeah, against USA.
I'd actually love to. I think.
Similar build, yeah.
Yeah, get me up there.
It's like, like reversing the batting order. I love it. Have you always been a 15, though?
No, I used to play fly half when I was younger. And then I did, I promise you. Through to about 12, 13, and then played in the centres till I was about 15. And I didn't really pick up fullback till I was about 16, 17.
I'm sensing the distribution. You're getting slowly pushed further and further.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't play there, though, further out. Yeah, and ended up at fullback when I was about 16, yeah. Coach back then just said, look, just want to have a go there, and then loved it.
And tell me about the uni. Are you studying at the moment at Loughborough?
Yeah, trying to.
And what are you doing?
Economics.
Wow.
With a bit of Spanish as well. So
wow.
I'm keeping myself busy.
Spanish?
Yeah. Spanish, yeah.
Don't ask me
to say anything, Ellis, because
I think the Spanish economy needs a bit of help, actually. So you've got an opportunity there. How have you ended up doing that? Is that something, because this goes on to a broader point, but how have you ended up doing Spanish?
Well, after school, I thought, obviously, I wasn't sure at that point that rugby would be, you know, a full-time thing, whether I'd be able to pursue that as a career. Because at that point, I was sort of uncertain whether I'd be good enough to make it. So I thought it would be good to sort of get some uni stuff going on the side, because you just never know when rugby's going to finish. It could be an injury, could be anything. So I sort of enjoyed economics. Well, I wouldn't say I enjoyed it, but I had an interest in economics at school.
Yeah.
And then Leicester were brilliant in sort of allowing me to study at Loughborough while I was with Leicester. So in my first year at Leicester, I was sort of in and out of Leicester, doing a lot of Loughborough, played a couple of times on loan there in the Bucks stuff, which was really, that was actually really good fun. And then I've found it more difficult, obviously, as the degree's gone on, and I'm in my final year now, which I've split in two. So I've got 2 more years and I'm sort of slowly chugging that along on the side. But no, it's not been easy.
Good to hear, though. You know, you obviously, Ellis has his bits of biz on the side, and you see a lot more younger players actually filling their time with actual business stuff or planning for the future, which has not always been there.
Which was exactly the point I was going to pick up, because we had Alex Donbrant in the other day, who was lauding his university days. I mean, obviously there were 1 or 2 pretty unsavoury incidents on the field, but he said he was a much better person for having done it. Do you see a slight sense in better people making better rugby players, whereas perhaps 5 and 10 years ago, people were just talking about academy kids who knew nothing but Monday to Friday training and possibly getting a game on Saturday?
I think you hear about like the more obscure stories of people coming in. That's probably why it gets highlighted so much, you know, like Dommers being at the uni scene and getting a pro contract through that way. And then, I can't remember who it was, but there's one boy who plays for England at the moment. Who is it who didn't actually have a club and then came in at like 22?
Nick Dolly.
Yeah, was it Dole?
He was down.
No, he came over to see his nan. Do you know that?
No.
He came over to see his nan when he was 18. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And played a trial game randomly for Sale and got a contract there and decided to stay.
Is that right?
Was he 18?
Yeah. I think he was 18, yeah.
He was about 18.
Yeah.
Right. Him and his brother. He's got a brother who plays at Cov.
I think so, yeah.
He's a fly half.
Okay.
He's a fly half, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a fly half.
Yeah. Sid, I think his name is. It's not Sid, is it?
Sid Dolly.
That sounds class, that
though. Sid Solid.
Sid Dolly's a character in something. I can't work out what.
Gotta be, I know.
You're now picking up the conversations in the Leicester canteen, aren't you? Was it him? Don't know. Yeah, it was him. Sid?
We'll roll with that.
We'll get that. We're just making stuff up, which is fairly standard. But it is, I mean, do you see a bit more of that? Because even someone like Bevan Rodd has come up rapidly on the outside. It wouldn't necessarily be a sort of academy product in a conventional sort of get in the gym and we'll see you when you're ready.
Yeah, I think like certainly back sort of when you were playing Tins, it was always not the old guard essentially, but people would always drag their careers out a lot longer, wouldn't they? And you'd always have faith in people because of what they'd done in the past. Whereas now I feel the game's moving so quickly and people are doing like mental shit now that you couldn't do 10, 15 years ago. If you don't adapt with the game, I feel you get cut loose quite quickly. So that's why I think you see such a big rollover in quite a lot of players coming through, because since Brownie, really, there aren't really been many fullbacks who take the ball out of the air like Fred has there.
No.
So he's probably the last of that kind, wasn't he, Brownie, back in that day? So I guess that's why you see the turnover. Maybe not so much with that, because he was there for a long time, wasn't he, McBiz?
Yeah.
He was angry enough to stay there for a long time.
Yeah, if anyone came there, he made sure they went.
Just go mad.
I did some pre-match with him at the South Africa game. He's still pretty angry.
Yeah. It's a shame because he's actually
mellowed,
a legend.
He's mellowed it. Absolutely, absolutely. But I think, I think the competitive fire still burns, if you can put it that way.
I didn't have an argument with him on Twitter, but had a
discussion.
Disagreement.
Yeah, well, I said when he put on something about when he was stealing the ball, I said, mate, you weren't even on your feet, so it's a penalty anyway.
And I think I've seen that.
He sort of went off me, and I texted him and said, mate, let's just make it seem like we're having an argument. I'm not really bothered about it.
Left you on red.
Yeah. But then he was like, okay, it's fine.
Don't be like that. So tell us, you're desperate to finish the degree. You've come this far, you're going to get it done.
Yes, I did sort of query, I think last year I was doing my second year, it got very, very tough to sort of keep that going, especially with COVID going on. It all moved online and there was just complications, and I sort of questioned whether it was the right thing to do and would that affect my rugby, because that was the biggest concern I think at the time was, you know, I'd want to do that stuff but I can't let that affect, you know, my career. So I managed to get through that, and then now the uni have been brilliant, spitting my year. I've got way less work to be getting on at the minute, but I suppose the best thing about it for me is just having something to do on the side. I think it's nice. It's very intense, isn't it? It's very intense what we do, and you're in that bubble, and it's a lot. So it's nice sometimes to get back. I've got mates at uni who I'll probably be with for a long time. It's just like having a separate bubble, and it's nice to sort of that for the head, just to be in and out. And
you, are you living in uni digs and with? Am I allowed to ask this or not? Why are you laughing?
No, tell him.
No, I was in halls in my first year. Now I'm in a house in Loughborough, so in the student town. I live with Johnny, Law and Dan Kelly, who both play at Tigers as well, and then two lads who are students. So it's a really nice mix of us boys going in and out. We've got boys at uni.
Go on.
No, it's just a party house. You'll get more.
Sounds like the old House of Pain.
It's similar. Times have moved on far. We've adapted.
Exactly. And I'd love to know how the two guys who
are just... Is there a shower and a wardrobe yet?
Absolutely not.
I'd love to know how the two guys who are just trucking along doing their university degree, how they find living with the England fullback and a guy who made his England debut in the centre in the summer. I mean, there's sort of, do you get out of the washing up and the laundry, or is
that's got to be good for you to switch off having boys who actually don't really...
That's the thing, because
do they care at all?
No. I think they do, but they don't...
They like being in your slipstream.
Exactly. Yeah. They're like, we argue, we just act, it's so normal, and I think that's the best thing. You go home and you know, they're brilliant. They're just cracking on with uni life, complaining about things we complain. It's brilliant just to sort of have those guys there we're all just good together.
I love it. A little bit jealous in some ways. Do you know what I mean?
It's just close to living both lives as he can be. And I think that's amazing. I think, you know, you go back, even though we say there's some differences from back in the day, but that's what you want. Sort of kept quite grounded, you kept quite normal. You know, I used to live in the house with Bolsh and Mearsy and Lofty when he was there, and you just sort of crack on with it. I think it's fantastic. I think it's great that they've got something on the side. I often sort of think, if I'd have gone to do Durham University, would that have been good for me, or would it have been bad for me?
But it wouldn't have been very good for Durham. That's the main thing.
Possibly not. But I can only look back and go, well, I made the right. It worked for me, but you never know. It could be better.
Yeah. Mm. So tell me a little bit more about life at Leicester at the moment for you, because again, that's sort of happened. I mean, it's obviously taken longer to come together, but you've had more time, I suppose, you know, in the saddle. But do you feel very comfortable there now because you've come through the academy, etc.? Is that is it a club that's fits for you?
Definitely, I love being at Leicester. I think there's something special going on there at the minute. We're building something really nice, and the club's pulling together. Comfortable, no, in the sense that, you know, it's still a place you have to go and you have to compete and you have to work hard, especially under Steve. It's not an environment where you can sort of get by day to day and do the bare minimum. I think you'd agree, wouldn't you? It's a place where the boys go in, we know we've got to work hard. But I've been there 3 years now, and a lot's changed since I've been there. Obviously, Jordy was there to start with. Now Steve's come in. A lot of boys have come in, a lot of boys have gone out, and it's been sort of weird being at the bottom and seeing that all happen ahead. But there's a really good group of guys there now. So yeah, loving it.
How's it been for you? In the 3 years, how have you seen him change in the last 3 years? Because obviously, you know, 3 years ago and where he's gone through, you know, playing for England regularly, being an England captain, obviously now being captain of the club. How have you seen?
Careful, Fred.
I was scared of him when I first went there, as were all the academy lads.
We all were.
But that's not because he's
still are.
You're just a scary, but you do look quite scary, mate, sometimes.
Fair enough.
But again, when you get talking to you, you're not scary at all, are you?
We just spent an hour and a half on the train together, so can't be that bad.
You didn't have that out, mate. You had your coat on. I think if you had that out, I'd have had to move.
No, you get way too comfortable.
Set up straight in the head.
Yeah. No, he's been on you've had a hell of 3 years as well, haven't you?
Following on from what you were saying, just saying it's weird because, like, you've had a very weird start to your rugby career in terms of what's going on at the club. You know, you come when we were 11th and now obviously we're flying, so it's exciting for you because obviously you've got your best years ahead of you, of course, because you're very young. But it's weird that you're going to now see how rugby clubs work, you know, like, because it wasn't working very well before. And then now you're going to see how it, like, progresses, and you're going to learn so much, where I'm sort of now in, like, the middle of my career, where I've seen all the sort of different dynamics, and you've done so much in such a small space of time. I'm jealous of you.
Do you think like the young players, you know, you say you're building something and you've got quite a few young lads at Leicester as well. Do you think everyone sort of from that academy who is coming through just sort of fed off each other and each other's success?
Your academy days were mad, weren't they? Won everything.
Yeah, we went back to back in the academy league. We won that 2 years in a row, and there's still, from that team, there's a lot of us still there. You've got George Martin, Jack Van Portfleet. I'm really close to those boys. So there's a really good group of young lads at the minute. But then saying that, there's a brilliant blend of, you know, guys like Genji, more experienced guys. There's no hierarchy, is there? There's no. We've had these many caps, you've had these many caps. It's just everyone's able to mix in this environment. And there's that great blend of sort of youth and experience. And I think that's working for us at the moment.
One of the things we've most enjoyed, actually, with you being the fourth wheel on the car, is it's very easy to get to the end and then tell the story retrospectively, but it's really good fun to be able to tell the story as it happens. And your story has been, we're talking about you, Freddie, being in a hurry and getting a lot done very quickly, but actually your journey over the last 3 years has been amazing. And I'm not just sort of throwing that out there. It's been a real sort of discovery, I suppose. Do you look back on that?
I'd say it's been like a bit of a coming of age, isn't it? It's been the
Is that fair or not? You're looking down.
No, I'm thinking. I'm just trying to think of what's happened in the last 3 years. It's always been wild, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, even if you go back to, like, Sausage Gate and the beer post-match, I mean, you were already doing stuff with us at that point. And we were very excited that there was someone out there in the media sort of saying a little bit of what they thought rather than what they're being told to say. But you've gone now from a guy who was angry and sort of possibly not necessarily getting it right all of the time to now the captain of the club, hugely respected and leading England in the way that you do. I'm just interested at this point how you reflect on your 3 years. I haven't really asked you that as a journey point.
It's a big question. I haven't really thought about it too much. Like Fred said, it's tough to stop and think when you're in it the whole time. We had a lot of time off in the past sort of two, 3 years. So obviously with the World Cup, then COVID, and obviously we had 6 months off, but you didn't really think about rugby in that time. So yeah, like Tin said, I feel I've always been the same. Weirdly, I know it seems like I've changed a lot, but I've always been the same. And like with Fred coming in when he was 18, like I thought he was just quiet. You're a funny kid. he's hilarious, you know. And like seeing him come into his own, and it's almost like the more game time or the more minutes you get. And it's not a hierarchy thing, but you know what it's like. I won't start giving Coley abuse when I first I did a little bit, but you won't start. Do you know what I mean? You're not that close with him, so when you build relationships, you get more out of people. And I wasn't comfortable speaking to the media or doing press at the club and stuff. So I probably held myself back a lot. And then the wheels came off a little bit at Tigers and we started doing the mental interviews with the all that stuff. And that's obviously in the past. But I feel that the more you play and you sort of feel a little bit more comfortable to get your own opinion across and actually have a stance and an opinion on things. Whereas before, when you haven't played, it's like, I'm not earning your stripes. I don't want to go back to that old sort of power trip thing. But you have got to earn your stripes, I guess. You've got to like play a little bit before you sort of surface your own character.
Well, comfort on the field leads to comfort off the field.
If you're playing
bit,
well, you
it?
Could probably have a point of view on something. But also, if you're not pulling your weight, then that's when people start to lack confidence. And
if you're playing every week, you naturally get that confidence because you know people are relying on you every week, and that takes it off the field and into things. I was thinking as well, babies came into your life, and being a dad and everything, they'll settle you down in a little bit of and make you focus on what's important.
It definitely gives you perspective on stuff. But again, everyone's like, oh, you've changed so much over a few years. I really don't think I have. I think like, people just listen to me a bit more.
So why have perceptions changed then?
No,
because they have changed dramatically.
Yeah, hugely. And I have no idea why. It's a big sociology study that we should put forward, probably.
Oh, documentary in there.
Yeah, definitely. Because, no, I completely agree with you. I actually had quite a good conversation about today. The European Rugby put out Ellis Gend, Rugby's Bad Boy. And then our media guy was like, what if they put that out? You're not a bad boy. And I was just like, no, I'm not. It's quite weird that they've got that perception of me to put that
does
up.
Does it frustrate you?
No, it doesn't, because I guess it was something that I carried around me when I was younger, and I probably thought, yeah, that's quite cool. Because you do, don't you? You want people to think you're mint and hard and whatever, but now you couldn't care less, so I guess it's something that you want to drop. But no, it's a very hard tag to drop, isn't it? Like, first impressions of what people perceive you as. I had someone tweet me, people are just, they're mental. Someone tweeted me saying, I can't believe Ellis Gend sings the anthem with such lack of passion. I wasn't even playing, mate. I was in quarantine.
Right.
So that's the lack of knowledge that's out there. Yeah, so everyone's opinion's always going to be a bit faded, you know? They haven't really got a clue what's going on behind the scenes, but I guess it's just tough to drop that whole facade.
I want this to be taken in the right way, but you've got the world at your feet right now. You are killing it in everything you're doing. Do you worry about a dip or about what happens when
only
it goes
when
wrong?
People talk about it, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm genuinely interested as to whether you, as a young guy who is rising rapidly, are people preparing you for what reality looks like when perhaps a loss comes or a performance doesn't go your way, etc.?
Yeah, I think that's something that's always, I wouldn't say it's in the back of my mind all the time, but it's definitely something I've thought about. You know, you have a couple of good games and people start, you know, spreading gospel and blah, blah, blah. But it is a worry because there's, you know, it's not going to be every game a perfect performance, a man of the match performance. That's not human. So there is a slight worry, you know, when things don't go so well. Well, then what are people going to say? You know, you can't. It's almost like, how do you live up to that? And there's pressure, isn't there? When people say those things, you know, you go into a game week and you do feel that pressure and that, like, you feel like you have to do something or you have to play to a certain level to sort of satisfy these people who are calling you good and stuff. And I think the biggest thing for me now, the biggest challenge, is just not rising to that or feeling pressure of that expectation. You know, I've just got to go out there and do my job. And I think that was the best thing about the England camp. I think they were very clear as coaching staff, you know, just do your job. Just have a game where you do a job, and if all 15, 23 men do their job, then, you know, we've got a good chance of winning the game. And I think if you approach a game like that, you start not to think about all these other things like, have I done something like this? It's going to go, all that stuff.
Yeah,
you just got to go out there with sort of not limited vision, but just focusing on those little things. And
it's a sensible fearlessness.
Yeah, having spoken to Fred for 30 minutes now, I'm definitely not worried about him getting too big for his boots and going off on the rails. There's a level head there that knows how to get the best out of his performance every week, knows where he fits into the team that he plays in. And that's all you can do. Yeah, I mean, it's so cliched, but it is only about the next game. It's only, and that's what you do, and you just focus on it. If you don't play well for Leicester, you don't play for England. If you don't play well for England, you don't get the chance of being in the Lions or in the World Cup. And so it's all just a staging process, that as long as you focus on the process that you're in and the stage that you're playing at, even if it means you're coming back from injury and it's a second team game, if you've got to play well in that second team game to go to get back in the first team. And that's the best way of looking at it, because if you don't play well for your club, your heartbeat, then you won't get the other stuff. It's plain and simple.
Yeah. It does feel like there's a sort of a level of sense across everything at the moment. Is that fair? There's a sort of a real excitement both in Leicester and England, but it feels a little bit like the hype train has slowed down just around young guys coming through. Or is that just, am I making that up?
What do you mean?
Well,
it's not as big a deal if a 21-year-old is now playing fullback.
Seems a little. Everything seems a little more controlled in the rugby world.
Mm. I think backs always sort of peak a little bit earlier than forwards anyway. Obviously, you can't say that for Bev because, believe it or not, he's only 20. Is he 21?
21, yeah.
He looks older than he.
It's a tough paper round uphill into the wind.
So I think like it's not as shocking now seeing like Radwan and Fred and those boys come through. But like I said earlier, that's sort of the older crop of players that used to get picked week in, week out for what they've done in the past. They don't go missing, but it's a cycle of life, isn't it? It's how it goes, and careers come to an end and someone else gets an opportunity. And obviously people clutch at straws for as long as they can, but it's good to see youngsters get the opportunity, and when they take them, it's very hard to get them back out.
Yeah. Obviously, we had this discussion around where Northern Hemisphere rugby is and where it sits, and I spoke to a Southern Hemisphere person today, and he's saying everyone down south is now watching. They think it's sort of the best league in the world right now, and I think you look at the games and you look at the semi-finals and finals of the tournament last year, then you look at this Autumn Nations Cup, you look at the Six Nations, you look how strong it is, and then you know what France have done with their two under 20 back-to-back champions now basically making up that squad. I think, you know, if you're good enough, you're old enough, no matter what the age, and it's just about giving those chances. And I'm just glad that we're a sport that is now looking at giving the kids the chances when they deserve it. No one's getting in there who doesn't deserve it.
It doesn't happen by chance.
Yeah.
Nothing happens by chance anymore.
Let's talk about the England run then. So the summer, when did you know you were going into England camp?
I got an email, I think it was about a week before.
Right.
To sort of say that you're in like a pool of players, so you're not in the squad, but you're being considered.
I would have loved to have seen him being in his student house and have to look on CFAX like back in the day.
Yeah,
has that feel about
901 or whatever it was. Isn't it?
Yeah. And then I was added to a WhatsApp group, which I think was called Summer Tour or something. And I think that might have been maybe even less, but quite short notice.
And had you planned Ibiza followed by Magaluf?
No, unfortunately not. Absolutely not.
We had our end of season piss up though, and you took it very easy, didn't you?
I did take it very easy. Yeah, it was actually the Euros on at the same time, so that was tough to miss out on.
he says as an understatement.
Yeah.
So the WhatsApp group comes and you're like, crikey.
Yeah, wow, this is like a massive opportunity. You know, it's like a bit surreal at the time actually, because it was sort of my first season of playing consistent rugby with minutes. I was hopeful, and I would have been devastated if I'd have not been in that squad. But I just had the mindset it wouldn't be the end of the world. There's plenty more opportunities, and I learned probably the most in my career to date from that 4 weeks. I think that was huge in terms of taking that into this season.
Yeah.
And then pushing on more.
So what did you learn?
I was going to say, Eddie talks about that, about upskilling and learning. Did you go away with the realism of where you needed to be operating?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of clarity about what you need to do and what skills you need to work on, what they expect from you. Coaches there were brilliant. They were really hard and really, but they picked you up on absolutely everything. You know, there'd be attack drills, there'd be backs drills where, you know, you wouldn't even be sort of, you wouldn't think you're even doing anything, but then the coach is on you like, are your hands up? Are you square? Just those little reminders. And they were brilliant for me because I never used to think about that when I play. And now I'm constantly sort of checking myself and my state and what I'm doing. And they just had some real good guys there. And it wasn't just that. It's being with guys at the time, like Henry Slade, those guys who have done it for years. And you go in and learn from them as well.
Are you a sponge for information? Do you want as much as you can possibly get? Or do you just like a couple of little bits to focus on?
I think sometimes information, like having too much is a bad thing. I like to sort of make it very clear. Sometimes you need a lot of information, but I like it when it's bullet pointed, you know, it's precise. You have got a clear, you walk out of a meeting with a clear sort of idea of what you need to do or what the plan is. If you go into a camp like that and you're not being a sponge, I couldn't go in there and not try and take as much out of it, because that would just be a waste. And I said when I went in, and Steve said to me and Smithy and the coach Lester said, just make the most of it. Just try and learn everything. Take everything away. Just do whatever you can. So that was the best bit of advice I had from those guys. And I thought it was a really, really good, really good month.
Everyone loves stash. When you get the bag you get more kit than you could possibly know what to do with. Is that quite a Christmas moment?
Yeah, definitely. Big old suitcase with the name on. I think when I took that back to the room and opened it up, it was pretty cool.
Are your flatmates now walking around in your spare socks? And they don't tend to wash much anyway.
Exactly. So. No, those are strictly at home with a lock on. My brothers like to help themselves as well to that sort of thing. So no, I've been very strict with that.
Under lock and key. and then the debut. So you get notified when that you're going to make your first start for
England. I think it was the Thursday. So we're playing on the Saturday. Found out on the Thursday morning.
And then an inkling through training during the week that you're going to be starting.
No, that's the thing. It's an environment where you don't know until you're told. Everyone has an inkling, but at training, it's so competitive. Everyone's throwing their hands in the hat. You turn up to that meeting on Thursday and you don't know. It's quite a scary, daunting feeling because you sat there waiting for your name. Obviously, 15, it goes one. You're waiting as he's reading it out and you're just sort of hoping you've done enough. And then hearing that name, it was a bit like, wow. And it was a lot of lads' debuts that day. So yeah. It was a brilliant moment, you know, after that was announced, the boys just getting around each other, you know, lots of hugs, pats on the back. I think it was a really cool moment.
Do you do, in that moment, do you do extraordinary pride, unbelievable excitement, a little bit of fear, crikey, you know, a bit of disbelief? What is the emotional roller coaster for someone like you who's come very quickly onto the scene and now it's on?
I think it was all of those things. I went back to my room after and rang, obviously, mum and dad. They were the first two people I rang to tell them. And that was a cool moment. They were over the moon. You know, they were probably, you know, waiting in anticipation for that phone call. There is a bit of disbelief and there's also certainly a bit of fear because, you know, you're about to represent your country and that's, you know, a special thing. So 10,000 at that game. And I think that was nice in the sense that it's like built into it. So I was able to play at Twickenham in front of 10,000. And then obviously this autumn, it's absolutely packed to the rafters. But it was like a steady introduction, which I think was a really good thing.
Was it good having the skipper as a clubmate?
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. I think when you talk about your journey, you know, over that 3 years, I think something that, say, the last year, certainly something you've become unbelievable at is leading, talking. If there's one man that can get someone fired up in the huddle before a game, it's this man. I don't know. You get the boys going. So that was cool to have Genji there, Wellesley, Hazy as well, you know, a couple of us making our debuts. So it's nice to go out there with some familiar faces, definitely.
Are you enjoying the leadership thing?
Yeah, I think like for my career, so obviously I've probably seen it all in terms of like I've been out of favour, I've been the main kiddie for a bit and then troop back up and spat back out. So I know what these boys are going through when they're not picked. I know what it's like to get announced that your debut, you know. So I've felt all these emotions. So I feel in that summer tour, I think we had 16 debuts, potentially more on that first test. So I knew on my debut, because a lot of the boys who played in that Old Mutual Wealth thing back when it was that, weren't going on the tour and they weren't that G'd up for the game. So it's a bit of a nothing game to say because the Prem final was on. So a lot of the boys were calling it a nothing game. And for me, it was my debut. It was the biggest day of my life. So I didn't feel that special about it, as sad as that is to say. And I knew that I wanted to make it really special for these boys. So in the week, I just told them, look, every single time we get a try, because you're going to get a fair few tries without sounding like a prick against USA and Canada, there's going to be a fair few scores. Let's celebrate as much as we can. Boys really adopted that, didn't they? And they loved it. And
I think you saw how happy we were for each other. I think when Radders went in for that hat trick, like you saw how much it meant to the other lads, you know, knowing how he was feeling. I think that was the biggest thing about it. Like the boys were just so proud to be playing with each other and we knew how much it meant for everyone because we were all doing it together. And I think that was just like, that was the best thing about that camp. We're all in it together. We're all doing it together. So it was nice to sort of go and see everyone do well.
What was your song on the bus debut?
Oh, mine was, it was the Euros at the time. So I sang Atomic Kitten Hole Again with the Gareth Southgate twist.
That was class, actually.
Which went down well, actually. Yeah, it did go down very well.
It's a very strong option, that. Nick, no one can take that away from you. I think Eddie said off the back of these autumns that there's a real energy and unity. And I know you obviously only did a week of it because of, we discussed this, COVID.
Well, I had 3 weeks because of the week prior. And then I was there for the whole Australia week, went home on the Friday. Thanks for bringing it up.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to sort of bring it up in that context, but as someone who's been there for how long have you been there? You went 2016 to Australia.
Yeah, 5 years.
So you went your fifth year. Wow, that has gone quickly. But is it fair to say that this group has got, I mean, obviously the World Cup squad was very, very tight as well, but how would you describe the current squad?
Natural. I guess natural, like it's a natural bond. I think that 2019 team, we had to work really hard to get that tight, whereas I feel this team sort of fell into place. Like Ben Youngs came out of that campaign, I spoke to him today at the club, and he said like he hadn't felt like that for a long time in an England squad, which how good is that to wear someone who's got 113 test caps now? Maybe more, I don't know. He's edging Leonard, don't he?
Yeah.
Very close. On hot on his tail. For someone who's got that many caps, to be able to say that he's been a part of a fair few squads, it's really good to hear.
And why is that? Why is it more natural?
I think it's a brand new group of players, really, isn't it? There's so many different faces in there. Yeah. And like Tin said earlier, nowadays you've got young, if you're good enough, you're old enough. So like you've got a lot of young people who are very different to the old crop of players, personality-wise, the way they want to play the game. And the game's changed a lot.
So. I don't feel you'll have to fight that much against coaches. They'll recognise what your skill sets are and they want to play a sort of more modern brand. And I think all the players that are coming through now want to play that brand as well. So I feel you're already on a, not throwback to the days where we did an overhead pass or through the leg pass and it didn't go to hand, you'd probably get filled in the change rooms afterwards, you know, whether it be Ben Clark or whether it be whoever. Whereas now I think everyone's sort of on the same page. Yeah. And I think you're just getting a nice natural mix of people who want to play but are also very talented at the same time.
Eddie got asked the question after that SA game. I was watching the post match. Who got man of the match in that game?
Guilty.
It was in the SA game. You got it. I didn't even know that class. I think I went to get a drink.
You got it.
You got both. Oz and SA. That's class, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well done, boy.
What did you get for that out of interest? What did you get?
A nice bottle of champagne.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Didn't spray that in 10 seconds with the straw.
Absolutely not.
That's unreal. I didn't know that. And then I listened to Eddie's things. He took ages to come out, didn't he? He was in the change room, I suspect, telling the boys well done and that. And then what's the bloke's name who does the
Mark Dedden Smith?
Yeah. He said something like, everyone says that you've got this certain type of way you want to play, and Eddie was like, that's a silly thing to say because I've just coached the players, the way they can play is the way we play. If you know what I mean? And that actually hit home with me a little bit. I thought, fuck, I never really thought about that.
Yeah.
Because everyone assumes this is the way the coach wants to play.
Yeah.
Well, it's not, because if you haven't got people who can play that way, then you're not going to coach that way. And I've seen that almost.
Well, I was like going to say, but that hasn't always been the case, has it?
Well, no, because we've had a very different crop of players, haven't we? I've definitely had coaches where they've got a certain way they want to play and that is the way you play. And if you can't do that, then you get dropped as opposed to encouraging them to do what they're best at, you know?
Yeah. I do also think you're seeing a massive shift in coaching in terms of people recognising that.
Yeah,
you know, you look at Al Sanderson, you look at Borthers, you look at, you know, obviously Mark McCall, back how their journey's gone. You are seeing these young players, you know, Baxter always talked about, it's one of his main points would be whether his players look like they were having fun or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a totally different way of coaching rather than just sticking it down to, right, we're going to play a physical game, we're going to do this all the time and even when you've got a world-class backline or whatever. Whereas now I think people are talking more about relationships, actually buying into it as a group, so you actually want to play for each other. I'll use the phrase, win the heart, win the player.
Yeah.
So actually make it about something you care about rather than just playing rugby. And I think that real shift is benefiting the young players coming through. You're not going in with a stigma. You don't, you know, has to be told all the time, you're shit and this and that. You're not getting that. You're getting people who want to know. And that's why he likes
got,
Eddie.
Got to deal in the truth sometimes, though.
No, that's why he liked Eddie, because even though Eddie would tell him straight, you know, he also tried to build him up as well, and he had banter with it. And that's about knowing your players, understanding your players. And so, yeah, I think it looked so good over those 3 weekends.
Yeah. So, obviously, I mean, let's get into that. You obviously bedded in the summer, come back, things going really well with Leicester, and then Tonga first up, 82,000. Just mega atmosphere as well. I love the sort of the time of day that you played, etc. Away kit. Did it feel like a whole other step?
The kit looked good as well. Good.
You like it? It's a nice boys kit. I did like that kit, yeah.
Did
that
it feel a step up?
Certainly, yeah. I think try not to think about, you know, the occasion and the stuff until it sort of happens, if that makes sense. So the night before games, I just try and not even think about the game, not think about the rugby, not think about anything. Just chuck something on Netflix, sit in the bath, just completely try and distract myself. And then we got on the team bus, and then that's when it starts really sinking in. You know, when you come to Twickenham and you see, because I've only ever played in front of Welford Road, 20 odd thousand. So to see that many, I've never seen that many people before and had to actually play in front of them. So when the bus was coming in, I was sort of thinking, oh, like this is sort of it's starting to kick in now. I had a really good chat the night before that Tonga game with Joe Marler. I asked him, you know, if he's got any advice for someone who's about to do it for the first time, and he just said, make sure you take it all in, give yourself 5 minutes before the game, just take it all in and sort of appreciate, you know, what's happening. And then once that whistle goes, you're in it, aren't you? And he said it's going to go quick. As soon as that whistle goes, that'll be done in, it feels, and he was so right. I remember looking at the clock in the South Africa game about, I must have thought it was about 10 minutes in, and there was 10 minutes left in the half. It just goes by like a flash because you're so involved in the game and invested in it. So I made sure before that Tonga game, when I got to the stadium, the walk from the bus to the change rooms, just to really took my headphones off, just to listen to the noise, look at all the people, and just it was just awesome.
Do you always have a bus seat that you go to, and then did you watch the cars around you and everyone who's in their jerseys as you're driving, whether it be down the 316? Do you still stay at Penny Hill the night before as well? Do you drive from Penny Hill?
No, we didn't. No, we stayed closer to the stadium in the night before, so it was about a 20-minute journey. Right. I had my headphones on in the journey. I like to listen to a lot of my
eighties
disco music. I quite like sort of still being relaxed. I don't like to. I know you probably listen to some stuff that gets you fired up, but for me, like, I like to stay.
You go 80s disco.
80s disco, yeah. I just like
the Rasputin.
What's 80s disco? Yeah. Bit of ABBA, Tainted Love, Soft Cell, that's my go-to.
Freddie, you've done so well for 54 minutes.
I was in the Dungannon changing room on the weekend, there was ABBA. I was like, what? The devil.
The game is changing rapidly.
It's just,
I love that.
It just keeps me relaxed.
A little bit of Waterloo.
I just like to stay relaxed, you know, that time before a game. And then the lad said, make sure you take your headphones off when you get there. Just drink it in. So when we turned in, when the bus turned in, I took my headphones off and was just looking out the window in awe at all the people there who come to watch us play. And it was that sort of 5 minutes of getting into Twickenham, the bus driving through all the fans, walking into the change room. It was like, wow, I want to do this for the rest of my life.
This is a ridiculous thing to ask, but is there something, when the ball goes up at Twickenham, how different is that to playing at Welford Road? Because, you know, Welford Road, it goes up and you've got 20,000 people around you. But at Twickenham, you've got 82 lights, fireworks. Is it a very different experience, or is it just to get another game of rugby?
The biggest difference is actually, I was saying this to someone the other day, when the ball goes up, because the stadium's so high, the background of the ball is actually people, whereas you play at Welford Road and the stadium's in the Premiership, the ball goes up that high that you're looking at the sky in the background.
Yeah.
So it actually helps to have that sort of dark background of people. You pick the ball up so much easier. But every time that ball goes up, for me, it's you sort of just go absolute tunnel vision, just looking at the ball.
Almost silent.
It's just white noise almost. It's just in the background.
Remember when we were at Welford Road the other day and I was trying to take those balls about 2 months ago? Hit me on top of the head.
So I said to Fred, I was like,
a bit ruder than what I'm going to say, but I said, you boys haven't got a clue. Like, I could take these eyeballs. I've gone like that. Lenny's trying to do spiral. He's trying to change the game. He's doing spiral ones. I'm like that. I can't get my arms up. AC's gone. I can't get my arms up. So I go like that. I jump and the ball literally just hits me on top of the head. 15 metres. Oh, it's brilliant.
Freddy gives you a
tap. He didn't catch any either, mate.
Freddy gives you a tap and goes,
gone. Yeah.
We can take 15 off the versatility list. I think we'll leave you as a winger. Go on then. Tell us about the try, Australia.
Yeah. It was, I remember there was a breakdown and I was on the blind side. There was nothing on the short side. So that's a cue for me just to get around the corner, just try and find something. And it came out the back and Marcus is, you know, in those situations where he's got the ball in the loose, he's so good at fixing defenders. And there was a little gap next to him and he stepped inside and this hole just opened up. And then I remember catching the ball and I was like, hang on, I'm through. It was almost a bit of disbelief. And then it was just look at the try line and try and get to the try line. I remember checking to see if Manu was next to me and he wasn't really on. So then it was just get round the outside.
He was so on. I could not believe that you...
I'd say if that wasn't on, I wonder what is.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that you batched yourself. It was class. I was buzzing. I was on a sofa screaming. I thought you were just going to give it the old standard draw and give. But when you put the old footwork on, you look quick, mate.
Thanks, mate. I've been working hard on it. But it was almost when I got to the right and he didn't tackle me, I was in. And you can sort of see in my face just sort of goes,
the big swanny.
I can't believe it. I'm just like, I've scored at Twickenham. And it's just awesome, especially when you've got the boys coming in. And it's just, I'll remember that for the rest of my life.
It looked like it as well. It's one of those moments where everybody watching can only be unbelievably happy for you. It's just sort of boyhood dreams being realised, really. Scoring for your country at Twickenham against the Wallabies. And what was it like off the back of that? Because that was the first big Tier 1 game for you in terms of winning it. It wasn't the greatest game you'll ever play in, but it was a solid England win. Off the back of that in the changing room, is it hoops and hollers or is it just keep it calm, we've got to go again?
No, there's definitely some of that, especially the day. I know I think you've got to have sort of a time period where you enjoy yourselves and you've won the game. So I think the Monday after that, we were very much on task and we were on to South Africa. But, there's definitely time there where the boys are getting around each other and celebrating that win. I think the best thing about the South Africa game was when that game finished. That was like a nice way to end. Obviously, with the Australia game, almost you turn into that South Africa game and think, right, we've got to go again next week. But with that South Africa game finishing, it was almost like it was such a brilliant end to the 4 weeks.
And the way it finished does make it special.
Exactly. And it was just such a great way to finish. So,
did you notice, I mean, everyone talks about the physicality of the box. Did you notice that in that game?
Definitely. I think, I remember waking up the next morning and thinking, I'm sore, more sore than I had been in a lot of games. I think, they're so attritional, they're big blokes, and it was a physical game. And you do notice that, but it's something the boys said in the week, we knew. So I think, we sort of had a chance to sort of set ourselves up for it emotionally and physically. It's something you can't go into a South Africa game and sort of expect it not to be physical and not to be hard. So that definitely helped, sort of knowing that it was coming, but it still was ridiculously physical.
And the fact that you lost Manu and you ended up with a rejig backline and you still played in the way that you played. I mean, how much confidence do you take as a backline squad in terms of the fact you can just bring people in and you keep doing what you're meant to be doing?
I think that's the thing. It's not the job of the guys on the pitch who are starting the game. It's the job of everyone. So, you never know when you're going to come on the pitch or where you're going to play. So I think as a unit, it's important that we're all behind each other, and whatever happens, whoever goes off, whoever comes on, there's trust, there's confidence in each other, and there's belief that we get the job done. And March going to 13, he was unbelievable. Definitely deserved man of the match more than me. He was awesome. And then Max did a fantastic job on the wing. So it's knowing that when guys come on and go off, that everyone's still going to dig in for each other. It hasn't affected the mentality. No one's thinking, he's gone off. It's not like that,
Yeah, and talk us through that try. I meant to talk us through the other try. I mean, because the Australia was the glory, the bot game was the power.
Always nice when you're 6'5" and you're in the kegs.
Yeah.
Look, which one was it?
Was it pick and go?
Yeah. It wasn't far off.
It wasn't far off. It was your second row audition. It would have been a mighty fine second row audition, to be fair.
Yeah, no, Lenny picked off. I sort of wasn't expecting it because he was shaping to go the other way, but Cobus Reinach was opposite me and I'd sort of thought, I back myself, I can get over. And Lenny did a brilliant job in tying in the first man and sent me over the top. So I remember going over and I sort of couldn't really see the try line. I was just thinking, use his long arms and get there. And I was, even when I grounded it, I was thinking in the back of my head, I have grounded it. I'm sure I grounded it.
Yeah.
But I was still doubting myself then, but no,
I'm unbelievably impressed with how incredibly well you played whilst all the time sort of working out, it's sort of working it out as you go type thing. I mean, do you take quite a lot of confidence from the fact that when you're out there, it looks to the man of Bourne. I always say that, don't I?
You look
a duck on water. Let's do that one.
I think it's just, I love that. Not the pressure, but being in that environment is just, I think it gets the best out of me. It's just unbelievable to be there. And then it's just an appreciation of just focus on the job and do the job in hand. I said it earlier, when that whistle goes, you're not really thinking about who's watching or the noise or anything. You're so invested in that performance and working hard that you don't really think about anything else. So until the final whistle goes again at the end, that's when sort of that emotion comes back in and you can really sort of look back at it and appreciate it.
And when Marcus's penalty goes over? You still had a job to do.
The job to do.
He didn't use the minute. You took the kickoff. But when he drills it over,
I was thinking, right. Just all I was thinking about that moment was the kickoff.
Yeah.
I had a feeling they'd come down the middle, and I saw
with a rather large gentleman chasing you.
It's the Beth and Jasper in the middle. I thought, here it comes. And that is the most important high ball I've ever had to take in my life. I was thinking, if I knock this on, they've got a shot to win the game. I don't want to lose us the game. So when that ball went up, I sort of had to, when Marcus was doing that kick, just focus absolutely, go through the process, try and get myself ready to get myself ready for it.
Brilliant. There was a really nice picture at the end. Who was that with?
That was with my granddad.
It was with your granddad.
It was with my granddad. Yeah. So he did manage to get to the Australia game.
Yeah.
And he's been, alongside my parents, my biggest fan. I absolutely love him to bits. He's not had it easy in life, and to see him there at the end, especially with everything that had happened, he couldn't even get down, bless him, because his body's in bits. But I managed, fortunately, to be able to get up into the stand to go and give him a big hug. And that was just such a special moment.
What did he say to you?
Not much. He just cried, as did I. It was it's one of those moments that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. Like, that photo is
class,
unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah,
good. And in the wash up of it all, it's sort of just getting used to life and what is going to be a very, very exciting career.
Yeah, definitely. I think now, you know, back to Leicester, we're in a brilliant position. We've got a big game on Sunday against Harlequins. So the focus is on that now. And for me, it's just about, you know, trying to add that consistency and trying to keep playing well and working hard. And then hopefully that's enough, you know, to get back into the Six Nations squad in February.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
And Genji, obviously, there's going to be some frustration in there because you, obviously, not for no reason to do with yourself, had to go back and miss those two games. Does it eat at you a little bit that you weren't involved? Because obviously you would have been involved and you would have added to that group, and now you've got...
Yeah.
Is that going to take that into this next period to make sure that...
No, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't gutted. I was gutted that I wasn't involved. But after the Australia game, I could really sit there and enjoy the fact that when they won, there was no bitterness at all. I was buzzing for Bev, obviously his first cap. And I thought I would be like quite bitter about it all because like I was at home and the boys were enjoying themselves and doing so well and you want to be a part of it. But like the amount of messages I got from the boys and stuff, like saying like, I would love to have had you there and all that sort of stuff, that was enough for me. And then I really actually enjoyed watching the game, although I didn't know you got man of the match. I must have went and got a cup of tea because I watched the other interview. But I honestly sat there and I thought, I'm really enjoying myself watching this. I'd rather be playing, but no, surprisingly, I wasn't that bitter at all. Good place to be.
There you go. You go, after you. Because I was going to wrap up, so you
okay,
go.
Okay, no, I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, okay, I thought you were kidding. What I was going to say, that's great content. That can go straight out.
So that's where we go. Shara, can take that share.
What I was going to say is that given everything that's been going on over the last 18 months or so, November was extraordinarily good fun to be watching England rugby again, and you were a huge part of that. So well done. I loved having you on the show. It's been really, really enjoyable. And I'm very, very excited to see what comes next. I think you've got a lot of fun, not only in Newcastle and Loughborough, but hopefully treading the big boards of international rugby as well. Thank you for bringing in your show and tell Ellis.
Pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Top marks. Just before we go, we have got to do a couple of little bits of GBNR business this week. A little note around the fact it's December. And we've got the perfect Christmas gift for you. So come along to our tour next spring. Apparently tickets are selling remarkably well. We're going to book you in for some dates. Have we sent those over to you? Yeah. Good stuff. You're welcome to come too, Freddie. We've got an ABBA tribute band to keep you happy if you want to be singing up on stage. We're going to be heading across the UK and Ireland to Sheffield, Liverpool, Edinburgh, Cardiff, Newcastle, Manchester, Dublin, Nottingham, Plymouth, Swansea, Oxford, London, Birmingham, Bath and Southend.
Jeez.
So it's not bad, is it?
I think we should just bring the household. Freddie's got to bring the house.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, bring the house.
They'd be there.
You can just have front row seats. Tickets on sale now if you fancy that in your Christmas stocking, and all of the info is on our website. That should be a lot of fun. And finally, we just want to quickly draw your attention to a single that's been released this week in the charts by Charlie Starmer-Smith. I actually met Charlie a few years ago at a wedding, sat next to him at a wedding. And I arrived late because I'd been doing Sky stuff. And I rocked up and said, oh, hello, how do you know? Da, da, da. He said, oh, where have you been? I said, oh, I've been covering the rugby today on Sky. And he said, oh, that's nice. I said, in that sort of way, I said, do you know anything about rugby? And he just sort of gently lowered his eyes to his name place where it said Charlie Starmer-Smith. And I looked at it and I went, well, that's Starmer-Smith. And he went, yeah. I went, okay, cool. He is the son of the former England Barbars and Quins legend Nigel Starmer-Smith. I'm sure many of you have seen this on social and hopefully in the press as well. Anybody of our era will remember Nigel Starmer-Smith, not only as a rugby great, but also as just the most fantastic commentator for the Beeb. Worked with him at Sky as well. He was the soundtrack of our Sundays, wasn't he? Rugby special, England games. Yeah, brilliant. Ski Sunday into rugby special. Nigel, obviously, at the moment, as I'm sure many of you have heard, is very sadly suffering with dementia. And so Charlie, his son, has written a song called Spotlight. It's out now. It's raising money and awareness for dementia in honour of his father, who's currently in a nursing home in Oxford. And Charlie wrote the song during lockdown last winter when his visits to see his dad came only through a narrowly opened window. You can see why he's, you know, looking to make an effort here and raise awareness as well. We would love all of our friends, supporters and listeners to get out there, buy and stream the song as you go. And anybody who's been touched by this cruel disease will hopefully pop a pound in the pot as well for Charlie. And for Nigel, go do what you do best. And here's just a little sample for you of Spotlight. So shine a light.
Good on you, everybody. Freddie, once again, it's been lovely to have you on. Thank you very much indeed for coming down. Ellis, lovely to see you in your goalkeeping kit. Look after yourself. Tins, get some sleep this week after a very boisterous couple of days. We have been the Good, the Bad and the Rugby. Thank you as always for listening. The show's pulled together by producer Queen Shara Kilgallen and the world-class fixer that is Matt Chuck Norris. The Good, the Bad and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, the Bad and the Rugby. It can't have been easy.